I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hello, and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield, and joining me tonight in a historic summit, ending a fierce war of words between the two of us, no bells all round, please, folks, it's Tony Kerr.
Yeah, a real meeting of dictators, this. Two dictators coming together.
We're shaking hands with history tonight, Tony. Yeah. How do you feel?
Equal billing.
I mean, who would have thought just a few months ago that the two of us would ever get round the table to talk about cricket?
It's a dramatic turnaround, it really is. Sent shockwaves through the cricketing, diplomatic world.
Geopolitical landscape. How's it going this week?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Are you less stressed than you were the last time we did this? People who listened to the last episode may remember that we recorded in a very tight window between you getting in from the dentist and rushing off to play cricket. Are you a bit more relaxed this time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I came across that stress last time.
To me.
To you, yeah. I gave you, well, it's the listeners that matter.
But I experienced it, you know, before we started recording and after we stopped recording, when you were tearing through the house, rummaging around trying to find your cricket kit, just kicking over ironing boards. I've never seen a man more panicked.
Yeah. No, I've got to go back to work, but hey, you know. Making time.
You don't have to dash off to the podiatrist or anything. It's an absolutely gorgeous afternoon out there, Tone. It's, what are we now, 3 o'clock. The sun's shining. It's a perfect afternoon for podcasting, really, this, isn't it? We've shut the doors, drawn the blinds. We're ready to go.
The mercury is already rising in here. There's a little bead of sweat just forming on your brow.
We've arguably got as tight a window this time, even tighter than last time, because the heat is rising, as you say, and we've got to get this done before we suffocate to death.
It's like being in a tent at daybreak, isn't it? It's like it's going from freezing to very hot in a very short space of time.
It's a good reality show in a way. Like for the listeners are experiencing both award-winning cricket punditry, but also a reality show. Will they make it out of this room in time? We need to start recording these from the beach, Tone, really.
Yeah, that's the solution.
That's got to be the plan.
And that's the solution probably for everything in life, isn't it?
Well, let's crack on with it then, shall we? It is already getting unbelievably hot in here. It's only going to get hotter, so we should probably press ahead. There's plenty to talk about tonight, actually. It's been quite a weird couple of weeks for the England cricket team, Tane, hasn't it? They had that huge defeat at Lord's in the first test against Pakistan, which we talked about last time, and which set the rest of the cricketing media ablaze. But then they came back with a stirring response at Headingley to level the series, and everything was rosy in English cricket again. And we'll get into that later on. But now things have seesawed back again the other way after they sank to their first ever defeat to Scotland in an ODI in Edinburgh. However, having said all of that, as we're recording this, England are well on top in this first ODI against Australia. So maybe things are going to seesaw back the other way again. Have you got a score update for me, Tony?
Australia at the moment 150 for 5 in the 33rd over. Maxwell fighting back, although he's 50 off 52, so he started a little bit slower. But
one more updates as we get them.
I'll keep you posted, mate.
We'll keep the listeners posted with this game of cricket that happened at least 24 hours ago by the time this comes out. So we won't talk too much about this Australia ODI, but let's concentrate on the Scotland game first of all, because it was a historic occasion, undoubtedly the most historic event of the week in the world of news. It was an extraordinary game in Edinburgh. Scotland batting first posted an enormous 371 for 5 an unbeaten 140 from 94 balls from Callum McLeod. Got them most of the way there. That was just a vast total. And at that point, you thought, this really is going to be a historic occasion, Scotland's first win. But England looked as though they were going to chase it down. Johnny Bairstow with 105 from 59 balls. But they slipped from 220 for 2 to 276 for 7. Liam Plunkett and Moeen Ali kept them in it with 47 and 46 respectively. But a dramatic ending, Mark Wood, LBW, off the fifth ball of the final over, meant that Scotland won the game by 6 runs in an unbelievable climax. So yeah, I mean, the first thing to say, Ten, I guess, is that this was a cracking game of cricket, wasn't it? I don't know how much you saw of it live, but I saw the last couple of hours, and man, it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I was in London, actually, wandering around, having a bit of tapas and stuff. So I didn't see the game live, but I got intermittent updates, and so sort of got wind of just what was unfolding. But yeah, I mean,
you sniffed out that there might be a story. Yeah.
I got a sense. I think I was ahead of the curve on that one.
You just suddenly stopped in the middle of Oxford Street and went, that's a story brewing here. You were at some kind of ITV journo reporters bash, weren't you?
Yeah, something like that.
So you're falling over each other to get this scoop.
Yeah, extraordinary stuff there, hey? I mean, you know, I guess we're sort of used to these single token kind of ODIs, I suppose. Maybe not being, yeah, well, we certainly not used to them being that exciting, that high scoring, and with that kind of result. I mean, I guess England were ahead, weren't they? They were ahead of the runway, ahead of the worm most of the way.
They were ahead of the one weight, yeah.
Ahead of the one weight. So, yeah, probably probably very disappointed not to have won it. Comfortably, but to have won it with something left, I think, in the end, which would have been an extraordinary chase, you know, had they done it.
It would have been their record chase, yeah. But you're right, it seemed like they were going to do it. From the position they got themselves into, they probably should have won it.
Yeah. But, you know, for Scotland to win it themselves in that circumstance, posting such a huge total, yeah, extraordinary and just so cool for them, you know. Yeah, I guess we'll talk about it in a moment in terms of what it means for them and for cricket as a whole. Probably very little in the short term. But, you know, obviously Afghanistan and Ireland have had a lot of focus recently, rightly so, you know, with getting full member status and stuff. But yeah, it's just another reminder that there are other teams as well outside of those two that are knocking along nicely.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it's the manner of the victory as well. It's a little bit reminiscent of when Ireland beat England in Bangalore in the 2011 World Cup. Okay, this wasn't a World Cup game, so it's perhaps less significant, but it is in some sense similar, because in that game Ireland chased down a 300 plus total. You know, the fact that Scotland have scored 371 runs here, I mean, it's hard to argue that this is some kind of blip or that they didn't deserve the victory when they post a number of runs. Had they, you know, managed to defend 220 because the ball was nipping around and they had sort of dibbly-dobbly medium paces managing to slide it through the gate or whatever, like, that would still be an achievement. But this is like a real kind of statement, isn't it? Yes, England probably should have won the game from where they got to, but it would have been their record chase had they done it. So in that sense, Scotland fully deserve the victory for posting such a big score. It's the kind of score that 4 or 5 years ago you just wouldn't have imagined an associate side being able to post. I mean, hardly anyone was able to post that kind of score 4 or 5 years ago, but you know what I mean. And what an exciting finish. And it's genuinely one of the best ODIs that England have played in the last few years. If you think, it's 3 years since the 2015 World Cup and we've seen this kind of transformation of the England team, and they've been posting these kind of scores on a regular basis and they've played a lot of exciting ODIs in that time. But even amongst that, it's one of the best ODIs that England have been involved in, and that's full credit to Scotland again.
Yeah, I mean, and also you can't forget that England are the number one ODI side in the world. So, you add that into the mix, you add it, you know, obviously the historic kind of sporting rivalry, you know, on across many sports between Scotland and England. That's a huge occasion for them to play a match like that in Edinburgh, to produce that. And as you say, no blip at all. The top five, all of them kind of got in and contributed more than the run of ball, except for one of their batsmen. So yeah, it wasn't just all about McLeod, although obviously that was an extraordinary innings.
It was an amazing innings, and it's an amazing innings from someone who, you know, like in the case of Ireland in 2011, a lot of their guys were playing county cricket. I mean, Callum McLeod, he used to play for Durham. He was released by Durham in 2016. He's now playing for Bexley in the Kent Premier League. And to rock up and play that kind of innings against the number one side in the world, it's, you know, it's hard to get your head around, really, isn't it?
Well, I mean, he'll probably be in the IPL next year earning like $500,000. Yeah, no, hugely impressive. And I think I saw someone saying as well, the vast majority of this team played together at kind of under 19 level for Scotland and maybe a, you know, a lower age group as well. So that it's a real fillip for just, you know, for Scottish cricket in general and kind of the way they're going about, you know, progressing people through to the top side.
Yeah, and the benefit of that kind of experience of playing together and of playing quite a lot of cricket for Scotland. I mean, Callum McLeod's 29. He's not sort of a 21-year-old out of nowhere prospect. He's been around for quite a while. And it, as you say, it does kind of give some encouragement to this idea that, you know, they just need to be playing more and more cricket against the top nations. It does have an effect. I mean, from England's perspective, I'm not sure that they need to be too ashamed of their performance. Like, this has been, like, the Australian media, I can't remember which newspaper it was, but there was a headline about, you know, the Poms being embarrassed against Scotland, that this is some kind of humiliating moment. And 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, perhaps it would have been. I mean, I suppose 5 years ago it would have been because England would have been dreadful at ODI cricket, full stop. The fact that they are the number one side in the world, it is easier to kind of think, wow, this is just an extraordinary thing for Scotland. But yeah, Scotland did play exceptionally well. For England, I think, you know, possibly a few red flags when it comes to the bowling attack. No Chris Wokes, no Ben Stokes, and it suddenly didn't look nearly as dangerous. Although this game against Australia today, they've done pretty well so far. But actually, I think, you know, for England, you could say, well, the fact that the batsman made a seriously good fist of that chase is another encouraging thing. It is very encouraging that they're continuing to post these kind of enormous totals. It wasn't a little kind of purple patch for a year or two. Like, they have got a batting lineup now that is capable of regularly scoring above 350. And if you score, whatever it was, what did they end up on? 365. If you post 365 and don't win an ODI, like, you're going to win most games when you score 365, aren't you? So, I mean, that is encouraging. And it doesn't feel like a sort of humiliating loss for me. I don't know if you feel differently, but I think for the sort of the English media and any fans who were there, it was just like a great occasion to be a part of. And I don't think the players will have been too embarrassed by it either. It was a magnificent game of cricket, and, you know, England were a big part of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, sort of predictably, when this kind of result crops up, you know, there will be people who, you know, aren't necessarily cricket fans, or the more negative, who will be like, oh, you know, it's a humiliation. You know, England should never lose a cricket match to Scotland. It's utterly embarrassing. Yeah, and I agree. It definitely doesn't feel like that. I don't think it is. I mean, Scotland, yeah, clearly are a decent outfit. They played pretty well at the World Cup qualifier. Finished fourth above Ireland in the end. So yeah, I mean, it's just great to see. I just think it was a great outcome all round, really.
Well, and as you've hinted at already, like, I suppose the real thing to talk about here is, you know, having talked about how well Scotland played, the real thing to talk about is what that might mean in a sort of larger context. So yeah, I mean, given the rise of Ireland and Afghanistan to test status, Ireland having just played their first test, Afghanistan about to play their first test tomorrow as we're recording this. So given that and the obvious strength that we're seeing of Scotland and of others, you know, there are sort of exciting stories around the associate world, Nepal, Hong Kong beat Afghanistan at the World Cup qualifier in March. It seems pretty safe to say that cricket has never had more depth globally than it has at the moment. As a result of that, the ICC's decision to shrink the World Cup to 10 teams is really coming under a lot of scrutiny, is really under the microscope. It seems curious, doesn't it, to put it mildly. So we haven't really spoken about this very much on the show, so I'm interested to know what you think. Like, there's obviously been a lot of chat about it in the wake of Scotland's win, but there's been a lot of chat about it over the last few months more generally. As I mentioned, we had the World Cup qualifier in March in Zimbabwe, and that saw West Indies and Afghanistan come through. But all the other teams that were at that qualifier did not make it. So we're talking no Scotland, no Ireland, no Nepal, no Zimbabwe. That got a lot of people talking about it. We've had the fixture list for the World Cup was announced recently. The ticket ballot is open. It's less than a year to go until the World Cup starts. So it's been a very, very controversial thing, this 10-team idea. And it seems a pretty universal view that it's a terrible idea. But what does Tony Kerr think? I mean, no one can be entirely confident of what they should think until they've heard what Tony Kerr thinks. What's your hot take on the 10-team World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to take the other stance, I think. I've been thinking about it. I mean, a lot of people have pointed out that cricket's pretty much the only sport which is shrinking its top global event, which does seem to be utter madness because, you know, you put this... You know, it was a huge event, Scotland winning the other day. Yeah, great for cricket. It's on all the back pages. It's on a lot of the front pages in Scotland as well. You put that in a World Cup, you know, it magnifies it even more. That's the place as well that you want to be creating those sort of events. And I know that, you know, the big three and others, that's exactly what they don't want. But that's what cricket certainly needs. And yeah, it's just muddled. It's cynical. It's dishonest. It's greedy. And by not sort of admitting that, or by basically not saying up front that, you know, it's just for these reasons, it just looks utterly muddled, doesn't it? Because you can't sort of, you know, to give Ireland full member status, but then them not to be at the World Cup is a nonsense.
Absolutely.
On it, you know, singularly, but there should be, you know, at least four or six or maybe more other associates there as well.
I mean, to clarify, the reason that you're saying it's dishonest and it's greedy and stuff is because transparently the reason that they want it to be a 10-team World Cup is that there's no other reason other than a sort of financial one, because it guarantees India playing 9 big matches. It was such a catastrophe for the bigwigs at the ICC, the 2007 World Cup, where India went out, they lost to Bangladesh and only played 2 matches, I think, didn't make it to the Super 6 or the Super 8 or whatever it was at that tournament. And they basically decided, we never want that to happen again. They tried to have a 10-team World Cup for 2015. They couldn't quite get it through, but they managed to get away with it this time. And that's the reason, isn't it? That's what it's all about. And I agree as well with what you're saying about like this Scotland win. It is a big deal, and I'm sure it's got a lot of attention in Scotland, and it's certainly got a lot of attention around the world, but it won't have, you wouldn't think, the sort of lasting impact that it would have had if that exact same thing had happened at a World Cup. It just means more. You've said many times, Tony, it's one of the few sensible points you've ever made, that sport is only interesting when there's context. And, well, I know we're sort of post-context in various ways,
yeah,
in sort of specific ways, but undeniably, any sports World Cup or Premier event is almost universally worth watching, isn't it? It's like, I'll watch anything at the Olympics. I'll watch badminton at the Olympics. I would never sit down and watch a random badminton competition in Surrey or whatever on Sky Sports 7. So this like singular game of cricket that is just a one-off and doesn't necessarily mean very much, I can imagine it being difficult for you know, Scottish people who aren't necessarily into cricket to get that excited about it, but excited about it in the long term. Had it happened at a World Cup, it just would have been a much bigger deal. And having mentioned that Ireland victory over England in Bangalore, I think it's undeniable that that went a long way towards getting Ireland test status and getting them seen as equals in the eye, well, not really equals, but in theoretically equals in the eyes of all the other nations, because it was like a real announcement of how good they were. It's an unmissable, unforgettable statement of what a good team they were. And this Scotland victory, people will be able to brush it aside in the end, but had it happened at a World Cup, it would have been more difficult to do. It is the showcase, isn't it? That's the idea.
This idea of protecting kind of what you've got at the expense of what you could have, it's just a sort of negative way of thinking. And you'd like to think that the pressure is on them to make a change going forward, but if they continue down this road, you know, cricket in a lot of places is only, you know, they've got to seize on the chance to expand the game kind of now, otherwise the chances of actually taking root around the world, you know, in places that it could do, it's surely only going to get slimmer as time goes on.
I do think this is an incredibly bad idea, the 10-team World Cup, for all the obvious reasons, for the reasons that we're talking about. Like you say, it seems kind of fundamentally self-defeating to be sort of shrinking the game, as a kind of actively closing yourself off to growth, especially in the current climate when, as you say, cricket is kind of fighting to survive in some of its traditional centres, let alone fighting to take root in other places, and it has to compete with so many other sports now and so many other things, with kids all on their Game Boys and playing their Fortnites and things. It's got a job on its hands, and most other sports around the world are expanding. Rugby is expanding. Even football, the Football World Cup, is expanding. We've just, today, it's been announced where the 2026 World Cup is going to be in US, Canada and Mexico, and that's going to be the first, what is it, 40-team tournament?
48, I think.
48-team
tournament. Is that right?
So, but that's an interesting point, though, because it's not necessarily the case for me that bigger means better. So, like, I wouldn't necessarily be so, although I think it's a terrible idea, I wouldn't necessarily be so cross about the 10-team Cricket World Cup if they were actually doing it for the right reasons. If the reason for it was that they thought, yes, it would be great to expand the game, but actually the Cricket World Cup is not very good. Like, it's never been, or certainly not in our memories, been an interesting or memorable or exciting event. We need a better format, and this is the format that we've come up with. So, you know, in other words, if the reason for doing it was because they want, above all, to have a short, good, exciting tournament, then I could probably get on board with that, even if I thought it was the wrong thing. I could understand that it, you know, I could maybe get behind it. But as I say, the World Cup's biggest problem is that it's a terrible tournament. That's quite a big problem, isn't it? But it's way too long. There's way too many matches. And if you contrast it with something like the Champions Trophy, which is 8 teams, 2 groups of 4, it's short, it's sharp, it's over in like 2 weeks. That's a really good tournament. We're always quite excited about the Champions Trophy. I'm never really that excited about the Cricket World Cup. So if that's what it was about, if they were reducing it to 10 teams to create a kind of short, sharp, sort of punchy tournament, if the spectacle was their main concern, then I do think I could get behind it. As I say, expansion in itself isn't necessarily a good thing. The Football World Cup is going to be 48 teams. That's not good as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's going to make for a much worse tournament, a tournament which works incredibly well at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the 48-team World Cup sounds really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be groups of 3. Teams then potentially will only play twice. So you qualify for the World Cup, you play twice and you're out. Then, of course, you've got the fact that one team will sit out the first match day round and be playing a team that's already played and they're in their first match. So it seems like a bit of a nonsense.
Well, it's making what is at the moment quite a sort of straightforward competition incredibly convoluted. And also, by making it 48 teams, that's like almost a quarter of the nations that play football. So you're kind of diluting the quality of the World Cup, diluting the sort of excitement of, yes, we've qualified for a lot of these teams. I don't know. It just seems to be taking what work a tournament that works quite well and making it worse. The analogy isn't perfect, though, with the Cricket World Cup, because in that case, we're talking about 48 teams or 32 teams, whereas this is 10 teams. It's a lot less.
I know, yeah. And what, there were about 110 members of the ICC or something like that in total. So yeah, you're looking at about 10% of the total, rather, as opposed to football, which is, you know, about 25% going forward. But yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, we've spoken about it before, but yeah, it's a 6 and a bit week tournament, isn't it? The World Cup, which is probably 2 weeks too long. Like you, I think the punchy Champions Trophy of 2 weeks, probably a bit too short to be sort of that meaningful. I think a month is about right. 3 weeks to a month is kind of spot on.
Like the current Football World Cup is.
Yeah, exactly. A month.
It's enough to feel like an event without dragging on.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're completely right. So the format, really, you know, the fact that England are going to play 9 matches before then, potentially a semi-final and a final. You know, 9 matches is a lot to sustain for people. I mean, the flip side is that, you know, it's not just the television audience for India. Perhaps, you know, there's 9 matches that people are going to get to see, which is quite good from a sort of spectator viewpoint.
Spectators at the ground, you mean?
Yeah.
No, that's true.
But then 9 matches is a lot of time to sustain kind of interest in.
Well, and also because it's one big group stage. England are playing 9 matches because they're playing every team at the tournament. because it's just one league of 10, and then there's going to be semifinals and a final, which is just insane. This is the thing. If it was about reducing it, making it more interesting, more exciting, then I might be able to get behind it. But that's not what it is at all. Unbelievably, it's almost, I think it's only one match shorter than the 2015 edition, but it might feel longer because at least in 2015, there were smaller groups and then quarterfinals. This is one enormous group stage and then straight to semifinals. So I think there's something like 45 games before you get to the three knockout games at the end, the three that matter. There's going to be so many dead rubbers towards the end of that. Like in the last couple of weeks of the group stage, you're going to have like seventh in the table playing ninth in the table. Neither of them can qualify. I mean, it's hard to conceive of a worse format for a cricket tournament than that.
It doesn't really seem to improve things much, does it? I mean, as you say, towards the back end of that group stage, it's going to get pretty dull. And also, that's sort of effectively what the ODI sort of championship is. You may as well just have the four top sides in the ODI rankings turn up and play two semifinals and a final to decide. Because that's literally, that's sort of part of what a tournament's about, is there's a draw and, you know, you work your way through and you come out as the winner.
And part of it is that you don't know who you're going to play. Like coming into this Football World Cup, it's exciting imagining what route England might take through to the final, which is obviously...
Might take through to the second round.
Might take through to group stage exit. But, you know, you think, oh, could it be Germany in the quarterfinals? Could it be Brazil? Sort of knowing that the only way that we could play France would be in the final. I thought, you know, there's all these kind of scenarios. It does take some of the mystery out of it and some of the thrill of imagining the different ways that it could pan out. You just know, well, yeah, we're just going to play everyone and the best four teams.
And then we'll play them again.
To the semi-final. And then, having had these nine games, it then boils down to two straight knockouts, which I suppose will mean that those knockout games are suddenly, all of a sudden, there'll be a lot riding on these games when there hasn't been very much riding on the previous games. But it's basically like the IPL, the format of which I don't like, but without the only good thing about the IPL, which is the sort of eliminator qualifier thing, you know, where the top two teams play each other and the winner goes through to the final and then the loser of that gets another crack at the cherry. I think that's actually...
Yeah, because it actually rewards the team that has done best in the group stage.
It's an innovation of the IPL that I think is actually really good. And that could have worked in this tournament. But yeah, I genuinely don't think they could have come up with a worse idea for this. And there's absolutely no defense for it, because it is about money and making sure India get nine games. And it, as you say, it's the dishonesty. If they came out and said, look, yeah, that is it. We've got to make difficult decisions. We've got to think about the bottom line. But they're not going to do that, are they? Because it's not literally that we need to do this, otherwise we're not going to have enough money to keep Chance to Shine running. So it's just because they want to make lots and lots of money for themselves.
Yeah. Ugh. As has been widely said, talking about the fact that there's going to be no associate nation at this World Cup. You know, they played, obviously, that qualifier in Zimbabwe back in March. Great for it to be in Zimbabwe, and I guess for probably all the sides except for, I guess you could argue, West Indies, who've obviously got a slightly different history, but and Zimbabwe as well to a certain extent, but for all those sides, that is a sort of meaningful tournament with good, and there's some cracking matches in there, but it does feel a little bit like they've just been sort of going sorted out amongst yourselves, like out of sight of everyone else. Because I mean, it didn't get a huge amount of press, did it, for obvious reasons,
A lot of the games weren't even on TV.
I think very little
towards the end they were, but not at the start of the tournament they weren't. Hong Kong beating Afghanistan wasn't on TV.
And obviously we're not saying that the Cricket World Cup should be 32 teams, because there would be some duff games in there, but it should be 16 or 18 or even 14 or even 12. But the fact that Ireland, Zimbabwe, the Netherlands aren't there. Nepal are another side. They didn't do that well in the qualifier, but another nation with a lot of potential. Yeah, it seems sort of madness not to be including them.
Well, absolutely. And I think another problem is the fact that they've played the qualifier more than a year before the tournament, which I understand that they have to, I suppose they have to figure out the fixture list, they have to put the flights, they need to be able to sell the games, or that's what they want to be able to do, is sell the games. But then the Football World Cup doesn't do that, does it? It's only kind of 6-7 months before. So again, like I could possibly get behind this. I might not think it was the right thing to do, but I might be able to get on board with it if they said, yeah, we're going to have like a 10-team or even an 8-team tournament. It's going to be short and sharp. It's going to be really exciting. But we'll have everyone has to qualify apart from the host nation. And we'll play the qualifier 2 months before. You know, suddenly that feels fair, doesn't it? And it feels like something that might be quite, that a qualifier in itself would be quite exciting. But this is just, it's just infuriating on every level. It doesn't actually seem that difficult to come up with a good idea for a Cricket World Cup, does it? 16 teams, 4 groups of 4, quarterfinals. Job done.
That took you about 12 seconds, I think.
It's early lunch.
Forget it out. Yeah, just head up, mate. Have a shower. You're done here.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want a quick update on the Australia game? Just here's the latest, the very latest. Australia 188 for 6. Maxwell went to Plunkett for 62.
How many overs left?
Just over 10.
Interesting. More updates as we get them.
Yeah, exactly. This is happening live.
Well, the last time we recorded a World Cricket Show was in between the first and second tests of the Pakistan series. We were very upset with the England team for their performance at Lords, where they lost very heavily. But the momentum changed a little bit in the second test, which we'll talk about now. That was in Leeds, Pakistan. It was sort of like a mirror image of the first test. This time, Pakistan choosing to bat first, which seemed like a slightly curious decision. And they were all out on the first day for 174. 3 wickets apiece for Anderson, Broad and Wokes. All of a sudden, it seemed like England were right back in the series. Batting was a bit of a struggle. No one got a half century until Joss Butler, right at the end, made 80 not out, and he started hitting the ball around as he was batting with the tail. Don Best, the night watchman, made 49 as well. So that was a decent lead, nearly 200-run lead. You felt that they pretty much had the game won at that point, and Pakistan subsided pretty meekly. They were all out for just 134 this time. The wickets spread around, 3 again for Broad, and 3 for Don Best, his first 3 wickets. In Test cricket. So that gave England a big win by an innings and 55 runs to level the series at 1-1. So it's an interesting game, this, Tone, an interesting series. Do we need to retract everything that we said last time? Is everything in the garden rosy for the England Test team now?
I don't think we need to retract everything.
You were panicking.
No.
I
knew they had it.
I think I'd released the podcast about an hour before the start of the game. So you were desperately trying to get me to pull it.
Yeah, exactly.
Pull it off the internet.
Hey, we said England could easily go and win comfortably.
We were very careful to include that caveat.
Although I then predicted that Pakistan would win the match. So, yeah, I mean, I've not got a huge amount right over the course of the last couple of months.
Actually, my pre-series prediction was 1-1. So I got that right, but I changed my mind after the first test and said 2-0 to Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Who remembers?
Yeah, exactly. It was an interesting, the whole series was quite interesting, wasn't it? You know, off the back of that first first test where, England were really poor. You know, some of the, the more sort of low-profile pundits compared to us, came out all guns blazing, the likes of Yvonne, the likes of you. The
likes of you, Vaughan, yeah.
came out. Yeah, Michael Vaughan, obviously very forthright. Yeah, that got a bit of a comeback from Stuart Broad. I think after the first day's play, he had a little go back. Yeah, that was all good fun. Like, I quite enjoyed the fact that there was that sort of back and forth.
Well, I'll ask you more about that in a minute, but finish your point.
But clearly Pakistan's batsmen didn't really turn up in this match. England bowled well. I don't think either of us said that Broad and Anderson were playing particularly badly or should be dropped. They come back and take a few wickets. It certainly doesn't cover over the fact that those two aren't going to be around for that much longer. Yeah, so they came back and did well here. Obviously, the bowling unit as a whole did really well because Pakistan didn't get much at all. Bess definitely brought something to the party as well with his overall contribution. And good to see him getting those wickets. All the batsmen got in, but again, it's tough to be too harsh after an innings victory. But the fact that none of them went on and dominated and made a big score and converted, that's another match has gone by without an England centurion.
It was quite a weird match, wasn't it? Because, as you say, even though England won by a huge margin, they won by an innings, it's hard to single out any one player as having a particularly good game. Joss Butler was man of the match, and that was a good innings, but you don't often win man of the match for an 80 not out. So I suppose you could say it was a really good team performance, but it could also just be that it was a pretty epic fail from Pakistan's batsmen. All right, England got them out, but as well as they played at Lords, Pakistan played pretty poorly here. They weren't able to apply themselves with the bat in the way that they had at Lords. So in that sense, I agree with you. I'm not sure how much we actually learned. The idea that, that everything's sunny again for the England Test team, all the criticisms that have been levelled at them still stand. This hasn't actually done anything to address those criticisms. I suppose you could say Joss Butler has come back in. People weren't convinced about his return. You were one of those. I was pleading with you as a friend to tone down some of your rhetoric, but you were not happy about that. He's come in and had a good series, hasn't he? But it's only two tests and he hasn't scored 100 and, there's a long way to go and he's played some good knocks for the England Test team before and then been found out in more challenging conditions. So we'll wait and see. But he did play well. But beyond that, no one's had a really outstanding series. And as I say, all the things that we did say, this is a problem. None of it's been addressed in this game. Only one batsman made a 50 and the bulk of the damage with the ball was done by Anderson and Broad, who, as you say, one of the criticisms is that they're getting older. Where are the guys coming through who could take over from them one day? This performance doesn't really do anything to deal with those kind of concerns.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, Butler's 80, was impressive. And that is promising. And you really hope he can build on that. Obviously, England don't play again in Test cricket until the India series starts at the beginning of August. So there's a lot of white ball cricket between now and then. So it's 2 months without Test cricket. So it's great that England are going into that little break or the long break with some positivity, something to build on. But just what an up and down summer already.
Yeah.
It's been for them a roller coaster. But I think that's it. What did we learn from this match? Probably not a lot.
It is frustrating as well. I don't really want to talk about scheduling too much. We've already talked about the scheduling of the World Cup for about 45 minutes. But it is frustrating that with the series poised at 1-1, that was it. It feels like everyone was sort of breathlessly waiting for the third test. And instead, we've got 5 ODIs against Australia, which is one of the most pointless series we've ever had. It does seem to happen every few years. They just have 5 ODIs against Australia. It's pretty annoying when you think the third test would have been quite a big deal.
No, I think you're right. I mean, well, we've said it before, a two-test series is, whoever plays best of two in anything. I mean, it's either got to be three. I mean, one, the only test, obviously, that Ireland played recently, Afghanistan are playing India tomorrow starting tomorrow in a one-test series. That kind of makes a little bit of sense. It's just like, it's a test match, let's go and play it. But a two-test series is a bit pointless. You may as well play three.
Yeah.
That said, how many more people are they going to get through the door for these five ODIs than they would for, you know, for one test against Pakistan. It's not all about, well, it is kind of all about context and scheduling and fixtures. You know, actually, for people to be able to go and watch cricket, I suppose, yeah, that's possibly more accessible than a single test. But hey, I don't know.
That's probably true, yeah. But it's
that's an upside of it.
As a fan of cricket, I think the vast majority of cricket fans in this country, anyway, would rather have that third test than these five ODIs, because going back to that word context, what is the context of these ODIs?
They're exhibitions, aren't they?
Yeah,
effectively. And and made simultaneously more interesting, but also much more low key because of what happened with the Australians and South Africa. And there's been a bit of chat flying around, hasn't there? But then the flip side is that actually the Australian team that's playing, is sort of slightly short of star names. So it's worked both ways.
You mentioned Stuart Broad's comments. What did he think about that? So he responded to Vaughan, who I think on Tuffers and Vaughan on Five Live and maybe in his newspaper column as well as Telegraph column, he said that Broad should be dropped, or that England should drop one of Anderson or Broad just to ruffle a few feathers in the dressing room. And Broad wasn't happy about that, apparently phoned up Vaughan to give him a piece of his mind. But then after the first day's play, when Broad had taken three wickets, he came out with some fairly strong statements. I mean, when you read it, it perhaps, if you just read the quotes, it maybe sounds stronger than it came across when he was talking to Ian Ward. He was being quite sort of lighthearted and a bit more jokey than when you just sort of read the words on the page or on the screen. But yeah, it's nonetheless a little strong. I've got a quote here, which is, it's a complete shot in the dark because he doesn't know what the changing room is like. I don't think he's got much insight into the changing room at all. The players don't talk to him about cricket or what's going on in the changing room, but it's personal columns, it's radio shows that need likes and airtime. What did you make of it all, Tony? Were you saying you quite enjoyed it?
Yeah, it kind of broke, not quite broke the third wall or the fourth wall or whichever wall it's supposed to break. I don't know. You can sort of see, I can definitely see both sides of it. You know, Broad is right. Vaughan is creeping into the sort of, willfully outspoken territory. I don't know whether,
gob on a stick.
I was going to say that. But, that's fair enough, though, because that's, everyone's entitled to that. And, obviously Vaughan's experience kind of entitles him to a certain level of, to be able to sort of speak freely. Yeah, I can see where he's coming from as well. You know, the whole idea of kind of punditry, and we're part of it as well. You do forget that it is people's job and career. So to basically say you should just sack one of them just to ruffle a few feathers. It'd be like me sort of going down to your work and be like, yeah, just get rid of Adam or Jim, just to ruffle a few feathers. get the lunchroom talking.
You just need him on his toes. Yeah.
So, the flip side to that is though that column inches and the rest of it and coverage is what pays Broad's wages effectively, because if people weren't interested in the game, then you wouldn't be able to make money out of it. So it was all a bit silly, and I think Vaughan did, I think probably overstepped the mark slightly, and it was fair enough for Broad. But as you say, the way actually Broad put it across at the end of the day's play was quite chilled.
Yeah, I think it was more chilled than maybe some people would make out. I like the idea of punditry on office jobs and stuff. I think that'd be quite good. Just like someone doing the photocopying. I've seen him do it better than that. He seems to be a bit off his game today.
He just doesn't know what he's doing. He's lost the plot.
But can you imagine at the photocopier?
Getting into your car. Yeah, you've just had a nightmare at work. Exactly. You've blown up the photocopier. Or you've just missed the photocopier completely, and then you get in your car and you sort of turn the radio on, and someone he's got to go, he's useless.
It's true, yeah. It is. You're right. It is easy to forget what a high pressure, what's the word I'm looking for, a sort of claustrophobic that must be to feel so exposed all the time.
But then the flip side to that is that that's the game. That's why you get involved.
Getting paid to play cricket for England, exactly. Which is a lot of people's dreams. So yeah, no, absolutely. Well, so I've got to say that Broad's comments annoyed me a little bit. A lot of people were like, yeah, Stuart, give it back to Vaughan, because a lot of people don't like Vaughan, and I understand that. Like, I think Vaughan is sometimes brilliant in his punditry and sometimes the opposite. And I do, there's definitely a question about the fact that he undeniably does talk up people who he's associated with through his management company. There's, you know, James Vince is represented by the company that Vaughan works with. Vaughan will often say Vince should be in the team or defend Vince or give Vince a lot more latitude than he will to someone like Mark Stoneman, who's not with his management company. This is undeniably true. So, yeah, there's maybe a separate issue there. But it did annoy me a bit. I didn't agree with Vaughan's suggestion of dropping Broad because I think he had actually been bowling well. He bowled well in New Zealand. He didn't have a bad game at Lord's. And from Broad's point of view, I think it's probably a good thing if you listen to the punditry and it annoys you and it spurs you on. But it was very early days to be coming out with comments like that, you know. And he basically was saying, see, I took three wickets, so you can shut your mouth. Like, do you remember the Dinesh Ramdin, yeah, Viv, talk nah thing? Obviously not to that extent, but it's slightly reminiscent of that. It's like, well, okay, that's 100, Dinesh. But can you do it consistently? And Stuart Broad literally took three wickets on day one of the test and then was coming out like, yeah, Vaughan's an idiot. He doesn't have a clue what he's talking about when it comes to cricket. It was, as we've been saying, this one performance from England, while it's welcome, doesn't actually amount to all that much yet. If Broad takes buckets of wickets in the India series and England win comfortably, then maybe he could come out and say something like that. Though even then, there would still be questions to answer about their performances away from home. But he might have more of a platform to be saying that at that point. But it did feel a bit like he was somewhat premature in being like, yeah, three wickets on a cloudy day at Headingley. So I think that's proved my point. They've got a lot of work in front of them still.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an intriguing series against India, isn't it? Yeah, there's a lot to play for both sides, obviously, but I think we'll have learned a lot by the end of the summer, that's for sure.
Well, speaking of India, they play a test match tomorrow as we're recording this. It will almost certainly have started by the time people are listening. It's Afghanistan's first ever test match. They're taking on India in Bangalore. That should be pretty fascinating, Tone. We've talked about how excited we are to see Rashid Khan bowl in test cricket, but actually a lot of the Afghanistan players, it's going to be really interesting to see how they get on in test cricket against the best test team in the world, India, in India. It's a tough assignment first up, but it's a really exciting prospect.
Yeah, and they've gone with four spinners, haven't they? Yeah, Rashid Khan among them. No Kohli for India, but otherwise, yeah, more or less there, aren't they? So, yeah, no, it's going to be fascinating to see.
Report next week?
Yeah.
It's getting really hot in here, Tone.
Yeah.
Much like everything at the moment that isn't a conversation about the Football World Cup, this episode of the World Cricket Show has been of absolutely no interest to me, and so I'd quite like to bring it to an end. You excited about this World Cup then, Tone? It starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Have you come down with World Cup fever?
I am, yeah, thick with it.
I'm sick to my stomach with World Cup fever.
Yeah, buzzing, mate. Absolutely buzzing.
Key question here.
Russia-Saudi, what an opener.
Have you broken it to your girlfriend that there's a World Cup on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she really has taken on board, though, quite what that means, because this is the first World Cup that's come about since we've been together. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a rude awakening, I think, particularly on Saturday when I'm watching four matches, 6 hours of football.
You were saying you suddenly realised what a challenge you had on your hands when you had to rearrange your plans to watch the Champions League final, was that right? Liverpool, Real Madrid. Because were you meant to be going out for dinner?
Yeah, I think so.
The only way you could get it past her was to say, this is like the match of the century. You don't understand. This is the match of the century. But I guess the problem now comes that you're like, you don't understand. It's Japan, Senegal. I can't miss it.
Exactly. Ugh.
As long as you record Love Island and watch that afterwards.
Well, I'll be watching that as well.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. That's your nightly
it's
ritual.
It's a bit rude
isn't
for them to put them both on in the summer. Yeah, that's it. That's probably the only upshot, potentially, of a Winter World Cup. Because it is quite annoying. That
it frees you up to watch Love Island? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But it is actually quite annoying that, you know, you basically moan all winter. You're like, oh, it's like this weather, it's awful. Can't wait for the summer. And then the World Cup comes along and a month of your summer is spent indoors.
It's true.
Watching football.
When you're not podcasting,
exactly,
you're watching football.
I'm just about to see the sun in July.
Now, that made it sound like Emily will watch Love Island because she's a woman. Now, what I meant was you both watch Love Island.
Yeah, exactly.
It's your bag, isn't it? Your jam. If anything, you're the one making her watch it.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. It's just such a... It's just a real world, isn't it? It's just real life, Love Island.
Well, last time we recorded, Tane, you were dashing off to play cricket. How did you get on?
I'm quite pleased, actually, yeah.
This was your return to the cricket field. Some listeners may have seen, I posted on our Facebook page, I shared on our Facebook page a video that your work did, your TV station did, where you're all saying your biggest fears, and your biggest fear that you listed was bowling in cricket.
Yeah, other people listed things like spiders and daddy long legs and that sort of stuff, but yeah. So I haven't bowled an over yet, so I haven't had to face that fear just yet. I think I'm doing all right, actually. I'm probably on my best run ever. Played twice, 21 off 13 balls in the first match, in a losing effort, unfortunately. And then 9 not out.
Crikey.
Last night. Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I only came out with 3 balls of the penultimate over to go last night. I was batting at 6 because I got there late.
Right.
Classic. So last night I just went in, missed the first one, smeared a 4 with the second ball. And then the guy at the other end, I think was on about 46, 47. So I just nudged one. Well, I tried to hit it for 4. But it got blocked on the boundary, so he could get through to get to his 50. But yeah, the first match, 21 off 13 balls, 4 fours.
Wow.
Dropped twice.
Right. Yeah. You didn't tell me that.
Good fours. Fair, well, yeah, they're right, actually. A couple of quite nice ones, just like...
Squirted.
The outfields in Guernsey at the moment are absolutely racing. They are lightning fast. So a couple of them just sort of played off the legs. One big pull, which was the one that got dropped. But to be fair, it was a sharp chance, the fielder, and then one relative dolly, which I should have been out on, having made about 7.
Right, okay.
But yeah, I'm quite happy with that. 21 and then 9, not out.
That's 30 runs in total. Your average 30 for the season.
I mean, that is decent for me. So yeah, quite looking forward to it. So that's 2 games I've played now. I'll probably try and play again. Interestingly enough, the game we won last night, was for the team that you've been starring for this year, but you weren't there.
Oh, really? You were playing my team? Yeah, I've picked up a foot injury, so I couldn't play last night. I didn't realise we would have been playing you.
Yeah, I didn't realise either until I got there.
Well, of course, had I been there, it would have been very different. I don't know what they're putting in the water this year, Tane, because both of us are having our best cricket seasons ever.
Yeah.
Although saying that, I've played 2 games. The first game I've talked about at length on this show, all-round heroics, steered a run chase, 6 and a 4 in the final over to win it. So the game I played last week, we were batting first. I was promoted to the giddy heights of number 3 from like number 9. Went out there massively overconfident, swaggered out to bat. First ball, just, you know, nudged a single, just a nice loud shout of yes.
Yeah, confident.
Yeah, so confident.
Shout, bellowed.
Second ball.
Yes!
Second ball, big swing, inside edge for 4. Third ball, another huge swing, completely missed it, clean ball. In my head, I'm like, I can hit every ball for a boundary. I'm that good. Got a bit of a rude awakening.
Cricket is so, or batting is so much easier when the ball isn't on the stumps. I mean, I've literally only ever got out bowled, just missing with a big, big shot. But as soon as it's like outside off or on the legs or or just going down the leg side, then it is just it's an easy game.
Well, that's international cricket. You'd be good at international cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
There's very few deliveries hit the stumps. You'd love a bit of Jimmy Anderson or Stuart Broad, wouldn't you? On that basis.
Not that, yeah. Even League Division 3 in Guernsey.
I didn't realise I'd have been playing you last night. I'd have probably and played through my injury if I'd known that.
I'm glad,
though. I'd love to have a bowl at you.
Well, no, I was going to say, I really would have hated that because, A, like, I wouldn't want... It'd be awful to get out to you. I mean, that would be Soul destroying.
The worst moment of your life.
It would equally be awful to, you know, hit you for sort of 28 off and over. You know, that would be really, that would be just tough to watch.
Well, I do target the stumps, Tone, so I'd basically your worst nightmare in that, on that basis.
Yeah. Do you hit them, though? That's you target them. It's a very different thing.
True. All right, we should probably wrap this up because you've got to go back to work. We didn't have a chance tonight to talk about AB de Villiers, whose retirement we failed to mention last time. So I'm sorry, AB, but we've left it too late again. But suffice to say, he's a great player. We're going to miss him. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk about him on the next show, which is coming up in 2 weeks' time. Between now and then, if you enjoy the World Cricket Show and you'd like to get more involved in it, I don't know what accent that was.
Yeah.
If you enjoy the World Cricket Show and you'd like to get more involved in it, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/cricketshow. We're on Twitter at Cricket Show. We're on Instagram at World Cricket Show. And if you'd like to support what we do, there's a couple of ways to do that. You can do that financially. Just go to our website, cricketshow.net, and you'll find all the links there. All the information is there. But also, write a review or leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you use, because that is a really big help. And speaking of podcasts, we have some other podcasts, notably a podcast about films. There's a new episode of the Little Film Podcast this week. We're talking about Solo, A Star Wars Story. If you like the World Cricket Show and you like films, check it out. You'd give it a good review, wouldn't you, Tim?
Yeah, I'd give it 7 out of 10.
Solid.
Solid. Enjoyable.
Well, that pretty much covers it, I think. Stay in school, everyone, and we will see you soon. Bye-bye for now.
Treat. I can smell your fear. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.